Yes, I'm going to report on some of my master's thesis research done at the University of Maryland through Dr. Josh McGrath, and also want to thank Dr. Chad Penn and Dr. Ray Bryant for their help with all this work. So for those of you that were here before the break, you heard a lot about these ditch filter systems from Ray Bryant and some of the others. So we know that one possible solution to remove some of this phosphorus from downstream sources is to use this ditch filter. One of the questions that was raised in Dr. Bryant's talk was, what happens to this material after it's theoretically spent? What can we do with this material? Can we pull these materials out of the ditches and land apply them as a fertilizer source? So that's what the focus of my research and what I'm going to present today. So the two hypotheses that we came up with were that byproduct gypsum has the potential to store large quantities of phosphorus, which has been presented already, and that this spent gypsum material has the potential to release this phosphorus as a fertilizer source for plants when it's land applied. So how we did this is, this was strictly laboratory incubation, and what I'm reporting on today, we had 200 grams of soil per cup. It was a standard incubation procedure, and for that we maintained the soils between 65 to 75% of field capacity. All right, so we had a number of different treatments here that are pretty important in this experimental design. First, we had two different P saturation rates. So we saturated the gypsum at two different rates. We had a low rate, which ends up being about 6.25, and the high rate was 18.75, and then we also had the gypsum. So the gypsum was saturated, and then we applied two different rates of the saturated gypsum to the soil cups. So we had the low rate of gypsum and a high rate of gypsum, and it ends up being about 2.5 tons per acre for the low rate, which is a typical agronomic rate. And the high rate ends up being about 10 tons per acre, which is in excess of your typically applied agronomic rate of gypsum. So that's where those numbers came from. For the results I'm presenting today, we sampled the sequential P, and the samples were destructively sampled, pulled out of the incubators and destructively sampled. Sequential P, we looked at days 191 and 119, and the total P we looked at just day 1 and 119. It was a total of a 6-month incubation study. We had two different soil types, both collected from the eastern shore of Maryland. If for those of you that know the eastern shore, we tried to get low phosphorus background soils, which is not an easy thing to do, but we tried to get relatively low phosphorus background soils, and then we had four incubators serving as a block, serving as replicates, so we had four of each sample. So this is what we ended up getting, just an overview of those different combinations of the phosphorus and gypsum. So we have low P, low gypsum, high P, low gypsum, low P, high gypsum, high P, high gypsum, and that's where I'll refer to them throughout my results. So one thing you'll notice here is that we have four different phosphorus rates. Then this is important in the results. You can see those middle two rates are not all that different in the amount of phosphorus that's applied. Where they are different is we have two different calcium rates, and that was based upon those rates of gypsum that were applied. So I did two different studies here that I'm going to talk about. We did the sequential phosphorus fractionation, which is the four steps on the right-hand side. We had the water. And this was done, I should mention, this is done on the same sample. So we took it, shook it for 24 hours on the same sample, poured off the sample, and then used it directly on the same, it was a half a gram of soil or half a gram of the soil gypsum mixture. And we also did total P using a revised EPA 3050 method. It's the EPA 200.7 method using a hot block. So going into the statistics, the sequential P, both of them we used ProcMix, and the results are displayed using Tukey's multiple means comparison test. The comparisons are at an alpha value of 0.05. For the sequential P, we had significant factors of soil, so the soils averaged over the other factors, days averaged over the other factors, and then we also had the significant interaction of gypsum rate and P saturation, which is those P application rates, basically. And so those two factors, the combination of those two factors, are average across the other factors. For total P, we considered the soil types separately because we found between the sandy loam and the silt soil, that they are different. So day ended up being significant for the silt loam soil only. So the first thing we looked at, first significant difference that we found was within soil types. And this is pretty self-explanatory. We had two different soils that we worked with. We had this sandy loam and a silt loam. You'll notice some of them, I wasn't able to display statistics because of some of the interactions that we go on, but that were going on within the soils or within the samples. Thing to point out here, what I should point out is the letters are within, the differences are only within each extractant. So you can't compare the HCl to the cumulative P. And what I did for the cumulative P, it's not a measure of the true total phosphorus. The cumulative is simply a cumulative of all the other factors or all the other extractants combined. So what I used that for was to try to make some comparison between the cumulative phosphorus and the total phosphorus, which I'll show in a bit. But in general here, you see that in the water sample, you see a little bit of a different trend than the other samples, but in general, because the silt loam has higher background phosphorus to begin with, we were able to extract more. We also found a significant factor of date over time. And once again here, you can see in the water and the HCl fractions that over time the phosphorus becomes less extractable. So what we're thinking is it becomes more tied up over time, which also makes sense. This may look a little confusing, but it's really not that confusing here. So if you look at the cumulative P fraction, for example, actually most of the fractions, you'll find that the high P high gypsum concentration or high P high gypsum samples, we were able to extract more phosphorus using this method in those samples. And if you think back to that chart I showed a few slides ago, this makes sense. We added about three times higher the amount of phosphorus to begin with than the other three samples. And so of course, as we add more to start, or as we have more to start, we're able to extract more over time. What's important to point out here, if you look at all these fractions here, is that the lower three phosphorus additions were not significantly different from one another. So as you applied at agronomic rates and typical phosphorus rates that we'd find in ditches, and these are actually higher phosphorus rates than you'd see in ditches anyway, there's no significant differences between those samples through this extraction. As I said, the next thing I did was total phosphorus, and I did include the background here. That's the far left in each of the samples. And once again, you can only compare within each soil type. So the background was no gypsum, no phosphorus, just the soil, just for comparison. And you'll see a slight, there's no difference in sandy loam over time over total phosphorus is what you would expect. You wouldn't expect the total phosphorus to change over time. We did have a slight increase, a significant increase in the sandy loam for these soils, but we're also just looking at day one to day 119. So what does this mean? What we saw through those graphs is that the P applied with the gypsum becomes less extractable with time. You kind of expect this. It gets tied up in less soluble forms, becomes less labile over time, so therefore it's less extractable. We actually found through this research and through some other data that we had with malic and water extractable phosphorus that the lowest P application rate compared to the background resulted in the gypsum sorbing the P from the soil. So instead of them being a gypsum addition, or the gypsum addition and phosphorus addition actually was less and was able to sorb some of the soil phosphorus, so it didn't add any phosphorus to the soil. And as I pointed out on that graph with all the bars, at our three lowest P rates, there were no differences in the soil P fraction. So when you're applying at agronomic rates and typical phosphorus concentrations you would find in ditches, there was no differences. And in fact, the soil P fractions in the control soils were similar to the amended soils. Therefore, what we concluded from this research is that the gypsum removed from the filters can likely be land applied without altering the available soil phosphorus. What that means is if you pull this stuff out, It's not likely to offer a large benefit to plants as a fertilizer source. It's not likely to add extra available phosphorus for plant uptake, but it's also not, doesn't appear to be in mobile forms that would represent any environmental threat or damage. So basically you throw it on, it may have other soil properties, may work as a soil conditioner to increase or improve other soil properties. But from a strictly phosphorus standpoint, it doesn't appear to alter alter anything in any direction. However, I want to have a little disclaimer here that this is only based on a 6-month soil incubation study. As some of the presenters pointed out in the morning session, of course, when you get into the field, crazy things happen. It's not completely controlled. It's not held at constant temperatures. So therefore, we would recommend before doing all that, that a long-term field study where you'd monitor the actual peat losses from amended fields would be done to kind of back this up or see if there's conflicting results in the field. So I want to acknowledge some of my collaborators here. Our laboratory at University of Maryland, Dr. Chad Penn from Oklahoma State, the USDA ARS folks, Dr. Art Allen at UMES, some of the Maryland folks, and NRCS for their funding support. And if you have any additional questions, I guess I probably have some time now, but you can always contact me later. And little plug to check out our website at University of Maryland.
Thanks, Karen. We have time for one quick question.
pH of the soils, the sandy soil was somewhat acidic. It was actually around pH of 5. The silt soil was closer to neutral with a pH of about 6.5. So that was another difference between the two. Like I said, when we chose the soil, they probably weren't, looking back, they weren't ideal soils to use. But like I said, trying to find lower phosphorus soils on the eastern shore of Maryland is not an easy task.
Okay, thanks, Karen.
Thank you.